Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of The Awesome with Cody. I am your host, like usual, Cody. Welcome back, everybody. So we're going to continue on with November's theme of awesome cartoons with awesome toys. So it is there's lots of, I think I said this last week, there are a lot of awesome cartoons from when I was growing up, and plus there's a lot that had really awesome toys, because it was definitely the time when that happened, where like a show would come out and it was essentially just a way to sell toys. And two of those I'll be talking about in the next 2 weeks, Transformers and G.I. Joes, respectively. But today, we're going to talk about one of my all-time favorites. Today's episode is about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. This one hits on multiple levels due to the fact that it started as a comic book, turned into a cartoon to sell toys, then turned into some live-action movies to sell even more toys and comic books, and then has been redone into cartoons several times. I want to say 5 different iterations of the cartoon, I want to say, have been done. I can't remember. But it was the one I'm going to be talking about is my favorite one to this day still, is the 1987 TV series. This ran for 10 seasons for a total of 193 episodes. It spanned from 1987 to 1996. Was amazing. First off, it was one of the only cartoons at the time that really had a cohesive story that actually went from episode to episode. So it actually had story arcs in it. So each season essentially had its own revolving story. And then it had some some episodes that kind of ventured away from it, but all together were always headed towards the same spot, same place, and same storylines. It's pretty cool. So brief history. What makes the Turtles so TMNT or Ninja Turtles or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, whatever you want to call them, or Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles, as they were known in Europe for a little while, because the negative connotation of ninja, because of racism, and stereotyping, I guess, really, was in there too. They have been, like I said, they're one of the only ones on this list where, like, that I kind of, actually, all of them I've really loved a lot. Mask was a flash in the pan, as they say. The other three, the three of them that have lasted, so Turtles, Transformers, and G.I. Joe have lasted years through different versions, different media types, all things like that. But the Turtles, they started off as a comic book. Actually, to tell you the truth, so they were created, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles were created by Peter Laird and Kevin Eastman, who were both artists and writers. They essentially started as a parody of a couple different comic books. So during a brainstorming session, Eastman doodled this sketch, which sparked an idea that they later basically made this single issue that intended to be a parody of 4 of the most popular comic books of the early 80s. That'd be Marvel's Daredevil and New Mutants, Cerberus by Dave Sims, and Frank Miller's Ronin. You can look those up and you'll understand right away why. If you know Daredevil and you know the name New Mutants, you'll not understand that at all. Cerberus is a little bit more less well-known. Ronin's less well-known, too, for people who don't really know, but Frank Miller is well-known. But Cerberus is a was kind of the joining, I don't want to say spark in a way, but basically he's a humanoid animal, So it's, you know, he was an aardvark. But anyways, so that's kind of where they had the idea of a humanoid animal. And then New Mutants was, well, mutants. Ronin, because he was a vigilante who used karate and ninjutsu and all those different things like that, which basically was a concept of Daredevil anyways. But that's that. And obviously Daredevil, everyone knows Daredevil from, well, also very current events. But it started off as a comic book and has been made into television programs, a movie. He's been in cartoons. He said he never had his own cartoon. So that's where they started. And they did very limited press release or presses or prints of them. Like the first one was 3,250 issues, I believe. Is that right? I had the notes up, and I don't remember what I did with them or where I moved them to. I want to say it's like that. It's a weird number like that. It's like 3,250. Copies of the first issue were made. Yeah, here it is. Found my notes finally. It was printed on cheap newsprint. It was printed in black and white, or made in black and white to save on printing costs. And the very first issue was only printed at 3,250 copies. A lot of those were just thrown away due to the cheapness of the book. So they're like super hard to find, and they're worth a whole lot if you have one that's in decent to good condition. You can get a pretty good penny for it nowadays. So the interesting about the comic book is the comic book started off, and the Turtles were very violent. They also, because they were essentially really printed in black and white, they didn't really look different from each other. They had different weapons from each other. So there was the Leonardo had his swords, which a lot of people refer to as katanas, but they are not. There's something known as ninjutsus. They're straight blades versus the curved blades of a katana, not to get super nerdy with you. You had Michelangelo, or Michelangelo, as technically his should have been said, or Mikey or Mike. Original print is they printed as Michelangelo, which is how Americans say Michelangelo, but his name should be Michelangelo, which is Michelangelo. It's Michelangelo, not Michelangelo. But anyways, doesn't matter. So he was wielding nunchucks, later got an orange mask by some of the later the colorized covers and stuff like that. But originally they were wearing all of them wear red masks. The only differentiator between them were their weapons, as I was saying. You have Donatello or Donnie or Don, who is the later turned into the inventor and scientist as the cartoon took over. And he uses a bow staff. You have Raphael or Raph, Raphael, who is the team's bad boy. He uses a pair of scythes, which are long, not serrated, very, very sharp tipped by three prongs, and are used for close quarter combats and blocking a lot of times. Actually, to get getting close, you would tie up the sword of your opponents and be able to stab them. And it was designed very thin point to very thick, where it would separate in between armor. And you'd drive through, and then it wouldn't get caught because it wasn't serrated and didn't have a blade. It would just be like a giant, just a giant needle essentially, and just poke right through. But you could use it to get past weak points in armor, in between the slats of armor on like samurais, but also between the layers, because it would push its way through. Pretty violent, anyways. That was your four turtles. They had their sensei, who was Splinter, their adopted father. Splinter is a Japanese martial arts mutant rat that learned the ways of ninjutsu from his owner and master. I believe the cartoon, he had, so in 1987's cartoon, Splinter was a human who mutated into a rat. In the movies, he was a rat that got mutated into a humanoid, which goes actually against the whole what the pseudoscience of it was, if I remember correctly. He was when he was him and the turtles were exposed to the mutagen, he was mutated into a rat because he spent a lot of time with the rats in the sewers. And then the turtles turned into humanoids because they were more interacting with him as a human. And so they took on human traits and he took on rat traits. It's a very bizarre idea. But the 2003 cartoon, they went with the whole he's a pet rat. And I believe in the cartoon or in the movie series, he was a rat that turned into a humanoid as well, which really, if you think about it, is more aligned with mutating, because if he was a rat and he was around with the turtles, it would mutate them into humanoids, versus because he spent more time with the rats, he turned into a rat and the turtles turned into humanoid because they were spending time with a human. Anyways, it's all nonsense. It's all fake science and it's just fun to do. Anyhow, your cast of characters include the turtles. They're a sensei Splinter. You have April O'Neil, who's has a very wide gambit of histories. In the original, she was a lab worker, a lab assistant. In the cartoon, she was the reporter. Later on, she was a student intern in the comic books. She's got a different bunch of things, but she started off as in the original comic books, if I'm not mistaken. She was a lab assistant in the Baxter. Was it Baxter Labs? I want to say that's what it was. I got to read over it again. I should have done more research on that too. Computer programmer and assistant to the famous yet nefarious scientist Baxter Stockman, who helped. You know, she helped program the Mauser robots. That were later turned into weapons to hunt down the turtles. In the Archie comic books, she was the more of what she was in the cartoon, which is the television reporter for Channel 6 News, who wore the sometimes skin tight yellow jumpsuit, as you saw from the many versions of their cartoon. You had she was a scientist again later in another one, and then she was the a brilliant science student who became an intern for Baxter Stockman in the genetics lab. What other versions they had? The reporter one was what they did in the live-action Turtles movie with the later one. Well, she was a reporter in the early movies as well. And then she worked for Channel 3 though. And in the Michael Bay movies, she was a reporter as well. never wore a jumpsuit. She wore a yellow jacket at one point, but whatever. So yeah, so that she's got a long history as well as the turtles do. You had one of my favorite characters following that was Casey Jones. So Casey Jones had a has a his history isn't nearly as convoluted and different every time. He's still a vigilante in pretty much every aspect of the story he's ever been in. It depends on how violent he is. In his incarnations. But he always is a vigilante. He was extremely violent in the early Mirage comic book days, which so were the Turtles. The Turtles used to kill motherfuckers all the time, so you know, wasn't that much. I want to say, where is it at? Early ones, he... was it the... Yeah, here it was. His first appearance was in an issue that was a solo Raphael issue called Me, Myself, and I. He runs into Casey Jones beating up a bunch of muggers, which is the what they used as the entrance for Casey Jones in the first movie they did, first live action movie they did, way back in what, 93? Was that 1993 might have been Secret of the Ooze. So, like, in that one, they did kind of the same thing where he was him and Raph running into each other for the first time. That's where you meet him. But fun little thing there, too. I want to say... nope, wrong one. Then you have Splinter's owner, or Splinter himself, depending on which version of the story you want to go with. He was the ninjutsu master, who basically is, the reason that Splinter knows, the deadly arts to cheats that he trains the turtles to know and use. You have, all sorts of mutants later on. You have Shredder and the Foot Soldiers. You had different mutants, like I said. You had a lot of fucking allies and weird humanoid animals. They had a sumo wrestler friend that was one time. Let's see, Shredder. Where else do you have? And then the cartoons really got. Obviously, everyone really knows more about the cartoons than anything else. But you have Baxter Stockman turns into a human fly later. The mutants. You have Bebop and Rocksteady. You had where is it? You had Krang. You had a bunch of different bad guys. We actually, well, didn't have a whole lot of bad guys, but you did have a bunch in there as well. On that, they did a lot of smaller ones. The Foot Clan, as they're known, was a parody of the Daredevil bad guys known as the Hand. The Foot, the Hand, get it? It's actually really clever if you think about it. But there was no Shredder originally. I want to say he joins later on, right? He was the Nemesis. or the younger brother of the guy who killed I'm reading their origins again. In the original comic books from Mirage Comics, Oroku Saki is the younger brother of Oroku Nagi, who had been killed by a fellow ninja, Hamato Yoshi, who is the owner of Splinter, who is the mentor of the Turtles. So the whole thing was a feud over a woman, and resulting in Yoshi fleeing with her to the United States. I believe she was then murdered. I can't remember what it was. It's been so long. But anyways, yeah, so there's a lot of turmoil there too. Haha, turmoil. Yeah, so the foot was a parody of the hand from Daredevil, to go along with the other stuff they're going through. He took over the persona of the Shredder, who then assassinated. Yeah, here it is. I knew I read it earlier. I was going over all this shit. He basically took control of the clan, formed the clan to be assassins. There were assassins in Japan. He took them. He became the Shredder. He assassinated Yoshi and Shen. And then obviously has challenged the Turtles for supremacy of New York, I guess you really could say. But that's kind of how he became the Shredder. He basically needed a way to train and get good enough to assassinate also master ninja, and get revenge for his slain brother, and the wrong of his brother too, because he believes that his brother and Shen were truly in love, and it really, I think if I remember correctly, they weren't. She fell in love with Yoshi instead, and started the feud between the two, and so on and so forth. Yeah, and that's how Splinter ended up in the sewers with the Turtles, and then the mutagen and all that fun stuff. And that's how that happens. There it is. That's how you do it. But yeah, that's the foot. I think it's pretty much, I'm not going to go through all the characters in there. As for the action figures, the figures themselves were some of the best because of the articulation and the way they were posed, but they were obviously based after the more stocky and, more turtle-like, characters from the cartoons, versus the comic books, which were more slender bodies. They were cool because when you bought them, they came with this little breakaway piece of all their weapons. They had ninja stars. They had their respective weapons. So Leo had his swords. Donnie had his bow. Mikey had his nunchucks. Earlier versions of nunchucks didn't move. Unless you were very astute and you could actually carve the plastic away and they would move, which I had seen someone do, but my brother and I never did that because we were lazy, I guess, or maybe just not wanting to do that. Anyways, and then Raph had his size, which unfortunately were a little different than what they would have been in the cartoon, as well as the comic book, because of the way they had to produce them. They were flat, versus cylindrical, so a little different than what they would be if you look them. You can look them up and you can see them, but they were cool. They came on this little frame that they were all connected, so they could just basically right out of the box you would get it, and it would sit behind the turtles. And essentially, it's just the pressing that they do from the molding of the factory, and you would just basically twist them loose from there. And they would break loose from the plastic, and then you'd have ninja stars, and you'd have their main weapons, which they all had belts you could fit him into. The swords went in to sheaths, and Donnie had a holster for his bow. Raph and Mikey's went on their belts. A little square pouch you could put the ninja stars in. Later variations came with extra stuff. Mikey came with a skateboard version. They had a bunch of different versions of the turtles that came out later on, like action sports ones. They had ones that were there was sewer sports, if I'm not mistaken. They had all different ones, like mechanical ones where they would like do karate moves and stuff. Tons of vehicles, the party wagon, which is the van. You had the pizza launcher, which is one of my favorite ones. Shot little pizzas out of it. You had the playset, which I got, which is a funny story, actually. In my one of my favorite memories, but also a thing that shattered my my childhood. So the way my parents used to do the presents and stuff for my brother and I when we were growing up, Christmas time, we would be able to ask for like one big present, and then we would have the smaller presents to go along with them. One year, I asked for the TMNT sewer playset from 1989. So I was a ripe age of 8, and it was amazing. I got it. What ruined my childhood was I got up Christmas night or Christmas Eve night. My brother and I had just gone to bed, which back then was a fucking chore. Because my brother and I would just, we like, my brother was actually better than I am. I was, and still in, I mean, later years, he was still better. And I just, the anticipation of the next morning just was too much for me to sleep. My parents knew it, so they would wait up late, or stay up late, waiting for me to go to bed, because I was a terrible fucking child. And so one night, I thought I would be really super sneaky. And I was staying up late, and I snuck out, and I saw my mom and my dad putting the playset together. Because what they would always do is, I was just saying this, so we'd ask for one big present, and we'd get a bunch of smaller ones, usually to go along with it or other stuff that they knew that we wanted from the list we would make. So I asked for one of my big ones, would be the sewer playset from the 1989 show, or 1987 show, released in 1989. So I snuck out and I saw them putting it together. So what they would do is, if it was a bigger present, like if it was a bike, they would put it together so it was functional and usable. Morning we woke up, on Christmas morning we would see it. Because my family, what we would do, and this is a long way of saying the same story, is we would do presents, smaller presents from family members, air quotes, Christmas Eve night. That's when you'd get your clothes, you would get other things that weren't toys. And then Christmas morning, you'd have one big present and a bunch of smaller ones in your stocking stuff that Santa would bring, air quotes, Santa. Well, I did not get my Turtles playset that night, Christmas Eve night. So I just knew Santa was bringing it Christmas morning. So I snuck out a little past midnight when I was supposed to be asleep, and Santa Claus could have seen me, and I saw my parents putting together. A, they were confounded because it was a very bizarre thing. It came in sections in the box, which it really shouldn't have. Should have come in a bigger box, but whatever. And you slid the smaller component into the bigger component that connected them, and then you had the pipes that would connect to the top of the smaller one and the side of the smaller one, and then a fence with electrical poles or phone line poles that the turtles could climb on and stuff. At the top, there was a hydrant that could be used as a periscope the turtles could use to look out of. You had the trap door that you could come out of. So all that had to be put together. And so I saw them putting it together, and it just, I was devastated. My mom said, oh, Santa Claus already came. She tried to cover, and I let her think she covered, but she knew she didn't cover well enough. Santa Claus came, and he didn't put it together, so we were going to put it together so you could play with it in the morning. That's how they tried to cover the fact that I ruined my childhood by sneaking out of bed and seeing them build it beforehand, because I'm a terrible son and a terrible child, and I ruin things for myself because I'm the asshole son, or asshole child, who goes and he shakes the presents, and it was, yeah, it's bad news. Like, it's just dumb of me. You know, that's how I roll, because I was a bad child. I'm still a bad child, technically. Anyways, I think that's it. I've rambled enough for that, that stuff. I don't need to talk too much about the Turtles. It's cool history, and how they were made, and the fact that it was a comic book, and then it was approached to be toys, and then they needed a way to sell the toys, so they said, hey, we don't sell enough comic books to sell the toys, so we'll make a cartoon, and the cartoon led to a lot more toys, and different iterations of both the books and the cartoons, and later movies, and all sorts of fun stuff, video games. Yeah, that's pretty much it for that. Real quick, what I've been reading, I read the third book of John Scalzi's Old Man's War, called The Last Colony. A really good book. It expands more so on in the universe that he's already been building with the first two books. It brings back the protagonist from the first book and one of the protagonists from the second book, Jane Sagan and John Perry. Together they get married. They adopt a girl named Zoe, who is the orphan child of a traitor from the second book. Very, very cool story. Really fun, really interesting way of doing it. I thought it was a very clever book. I enjoyed it quite a bit. He's really expanding more on the characters of John Perry and Jane Sagan, in the universe that they're thrust into. And at the end of the book is just opening up more and more stuff to go on, which is going to be pretty crazy and pretty fun. A lot of fun there. I finished that. I need another book to read, so I decided to get another Stephen King novella. I decided to get Gwendolyn's Button Box. So Gwendolyn's Button Box is a collaboration story between Stephen King and Richard Chizmar? I don't know how to pronounce his name. That was released in last year in 2017, and it was essentially the way it works. The way the collaboration worked is Stephen King wrote was writing a story, and he couldn't finish it, and so it kind of sat aside. And as a joke, during a phone call conversation, basically Chizmar said, Richard said, hey, you know, if you ever had anything to slide my way, I'd love to work on something. And basically he emailed him a copy of it and said, hey, here's what I have. And then he basically helped him flush out the rest of the story and come to an ending with it. Really fun book, very short. It's 175 pages. I did not actually read any of it. I listened to the whole thing, cause it's only 2 hours and 40 something minutes of audio. So this is the plot of the book. This is it's not hard to I'm not going to spoil it for you. It's actually a really fun read or listen, whichever one you do it. And if you do the audiobook, you get another short story by very short story by Stephen King called The Music Room, which is a fucked up little story he did. And I'll tell you about it in a minute. But this is the plot story. So the story takes place in Stephen King's fictional town of Castle Rock in 1974. A 12-year-old girl named Gwendy Peterson, whose name is basically a combination of Wendy and Gwendolyn. Her dad wanted a Gwendolyn. Her mom wanted a Wendy. So they combined the two and they got Gwendy, who encounters a stranger in dark clothes and a black hat who invites her to a palaver. It's interesting. I did not know what the button box was. I thought the button box was literally a button or a box with buttons in it. It's not. It's a box with buttons on it. There you go. That's an interesting thing about it. I did not know that's what it was until it was described right away in the book. And I was like, oh, a button box is a box that has pushable buttons on it. Interesting. And in Stephen King fashion, it takes some ups and downs and twists and turns. And I'm not too sure how much of it was written by King and how much is written by Chesmar, whatever his fucking name is. There was a little bit of a conversation after the fact where they explained how they got it, but I have no idea how much was Richard and how much was Steven, and so on and so forth. I could probably look it up, but I didn't. But it was pretty cool. Pretty fun to read. It would make a really good movie. Because you could easily get away with it within a 2-hour span, 2.5-hour span. And it spans over a total of... starts in 75 and ends in 80... 85, so it's like 10 years, 10 or 12 years. She starts when she's 12. I guess it's, no, it's gotta be about 10 years, I think. She was, because it starts when she was 12, it ends when she's like 22 or 23. You graduate in your high school when you're 18, right? So 18, 19, 20, yeah, so 22 or so. It's about 10 years. And it, it could have been fleshed out to be a longer story, but I think it didn't need to be. It did a really good job of jumping in time and telling the story. So it's just a fun read, or listen to, as I said. But I highly recommend it if you want to check it out. It's one of those, it's like I said, it's very Stephen King in a fashion where it has weird, not weird pacing, but like a weird flow to the story. Where, like, you think it's going one way, and then it goes kind of that way, but has a bunch... It goes like, hey, I have this magic box, now I'm gonna kill people in New Guinea. You're like, wait, what? It's so weird. But it's really fun. It has a pretty... non-Stephen King ending. Very Stephen King in one way, but not Stephen King in the other way. It's very interesting to do it, but it's one of those things where it's much like his Steve, like a lot of his books. It's this moment, like this snapshot in time, and it doesn't have a true start or a true ending. It's just, this is where like two characters meet, and that's where the story, air quotes, starts, and then it goes from there. If that makes any sense to you. On what I mean by that, it's very interesting the way they do it, and tremendous. If you ask me, it was a really fun story, and I think it would make a really good movie, either for Netflix, like Gerald's Game, and what is that, 1940? What are that the other one with Thomas Jane is? I can't think of the name of it. 1940 something. That was really good. It was fucked up. But like Gerald's Game and things like that. So you could do it. You could do it in a movie like that. You could just do like a 2.5-hour movie, and you would get all of it, and you'd have essentially two or three people playing the part of Gwendolyn or Gwendy, throughout the years. Not very big cast at all. Like I said, you'd have a couple characters, Gwendy, Olive, and the bully, I can't think of his name right now, something, I can't remember his first name. Ricky? Yeah. Anyway, it doesn't matter. So you just have a couple people that would just age throughout because there's only a few that are recurring. But yeah, you could do it. It would be really fun and have a kind of fucked up ending. But anyways, that's it for this week's episode. As we were talking about awesome cartoons with awesome toys. We were talking about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And I rambled about their history and stuff like that. Next week, tune again for Transformers, another one of my childhood favorites. And then the last week will be G.I. Joe. I almost forgot what it was going to be. But yeah, that's it for this week's episode, everybody. And as usual, let's be awesome.